So, Chris Gibson, tell me something. You voted against the GOP House budget. Now, it's a fairly strict budget. We've talked about it in the past, I believe. My question is this. How do you say to the cynics, oh, I know, he's going to run for governor, and what he's doing now is voting against the right-wing Republican budget to help himself in blue state New York?
Well, I've got a pattern of finding the best budget for our area and supporting that. You know, my issue with the GOP budget this year is, look, when we did the Budget Control Act of 2011, that was a bipartisan agreement voted on by both Republicans and Democrats, signed into law by the President of the United States, President Barack Obama. And we had made commitment to the American people to try to do a better job balancing current and future needs. And we did this in the first half of the agreement. And then we said we're going to work together on the second half so that we can come forward with thoughtful, longer-term reforms. Well, that didn't happen. And when that didn't happen, we ended up slamming into the backup plan, which was the sequester. Now, the sequester, in my view, hurts national security. And I, you know, we've been together, Alan. I've talked about how we can think and act differently. And through thoughtful reform over the course of about a decade, we can be safer for less money. But not with a sequester. That is not the right way to do the national security establishment reform. And then with domestic priorities. You look at our roads and bridges, I think we can clearly come to the agreement that we need more investment in terms of our infrastructure. Schools, I think this is so important that not only are we investing in our physical infrastructure, but our human capital. And that's also important. And if you think about some of our important programs, whether it be Head Start, some of these other programs that help with equal opportunity, the race of life, that we all want folks to do very well in, that there are certain investments that we need to make. Well, when you end up with a sequester, you're not making good judgment. And that's my problem with the GOP budget, is it codifies sequester. Those numbers, when you take a somewhat, you don't even have to go that deep dive, but when you start to look at the top line numbers there, it's codifying the sequester. And I was very clear to my leadership. I said, look, I understand how important it is that we work together, that we come together with thoughtful proposals on balancing current and future needs, but I don't consider the sequester part of that. So I voted no.
I guess I want to go now to oil trains. Oil trains have become a very controversial issue in the Northeast. The type of oil that's being transported is volatile. There are people who say, hey, we have to live next to the railroad tracks, and we may be among the poorer people around here. So therefore, you're discriminating against us by putting these oil bombs right next to us.
Their concerns are not unfounded. The first time that I took a brief on this, I was shocked, quite frankly, at the risk assessment. I looked at this, and as a former commander, before every operation, I would have to review the risk assessment. That's the entire risk assessment, everything that we were doing. And up to that point, the commander, I was responsible for taking controls to manage risk. I mean, there's risk getting up out of bed in the morning. I'm not suggesting for a moment it's ever going to go to zero, but there has to be disciplined, mature leadership that takes safeguards and protocols so that we minimize risk and that we understand the risk that we're talking about. Well, when I took this brief, I was like, who approved this? You know, how could this be? And what I have learned is the feds point at the state and the state points at the feds. So you've got a situation now where we've already lost life. You know, it's happened in Virginia. It's happened in Quebec. We had 57 lives that were lost in Quebec because of an accident. And now the administration has come forward with new regulations. I do support the new regulations. I would also tell you it's not enough. In the main, these regulations deal with new cars that are, in fact, constructed better and will be safer than the ones that we're using primarily now. But keep in mind that even one of the accidents that occurred in our country, in Virginia, was with the new variant. So, you know, anyone that's out there saying that this is the panacea, we need to look at the record here that even with the new car, with the 117, there has been significant event, including a major event.
When my kids were growing up, my wife Roselle would say to them, which kind of scrambled eggs do you want? Giving them a choice. And I'm wondering about the choice between oil pipelines, which many people who listen to the station can't abide, and oil trains. And then when you press the environmental crowd on this, quite properly, they'll say, no, the way to do this is do more solar. Can you make any sense out of all of this?
Well, actually, it's in many ways, it's illustrative of the challenge that I have every day in Washington, D.C., because, you know, you name the issue. We're going to talk about one here in a second. But I'm often, you know, what's suggested to me is you have to wear your red shirt or your blue shirt. You know, have you got confused? Do you know what's going on here? This is really disturbing to me, because where's the red, white, and blue shirt? You know, where's the shirt for all of us? You know, the fact of the matter is we need to at once be very thoughtful and cognizant of the impact of energy costs on hardworking families right now. I grew up in a working class family, and we were crushed by the oil and the gas and home heating prices of the late 1970s. It really hurt our family. And I know there's a lot of families out there. The median income in my district is $50,000. That means half of the people make less than that. So when folks are not serious about keeping energy costs down, I don't think that that's really the best policy to help my working class families and my small businesses. At the same time, there are some in my party that want to relegate clean and renewable energy into, you know, this Solyndra phenomenon and say that, you know, this is not a smart move for our country. I couldn't disagree more. This is a country that's proven time and again that we can do hard things. We put a man on the moon. We absolutely can be the country that leads the world when it comes to photovoltaics, when it comes to biomass, when it comes to hydroelectricity. You know, we're talking about wind power and also energy efficiency. What we need to do are make proper investments when it comes to research, development, and prototyping. You know, in some ways, it's probably understandable and somewhat predictable that a former soldier would be the one making this argument because, you know, if you look at the 1950s, and setting aside for a moment the content of the debate of the USSR versus the United States, because certainly there's a wide room for extensive debate on that. The fact of the matter is that there was a broad bipartisan consensus to confront the Soviet challenge, and we did that by significant resources for research, development, and prototyping. And as a consequence, and with some help from Gorbachev, who chose not to fight about it, we ended up ending the Cold War without really a major shot being fired. And what did we also get as a positive collateral? Well, we got microcomputers. We got the supercomputer. We got the internet. We got the information age that came consequent to all these investments we've made. And what I'm saying now is using the same approaches, and indeed some of the same engineers, we can, for example, drive photovoltaics down to 9 cents per kilowatt hour, which is the goal of the Sunshot program, not to be confused with the Moonshot, which is really the purpose of the analogy there. So what I'm saying to you is we don't have to choose. I argue it's a false choice to say that we have to choose between helping working class families now and working towards renewables in the future. Why, we should be able to do both. We can work to keep our current costs down as we're not accepting that this is the best place that we can be. This is the country that will move forward and lead when it comes to renewable energy and energy efficiencies.
Congressman Chris Gibson, always wonderful to talk to you. You know, I feel so lucky that you care enough to come by and talk to us this way. And
I enjoy it, Alan. I enjoy our time together very much. And
I appreciate it.
You know, this is a wonderful program and a great channel, and I wish all the listeners out there the very best.